for when St. Paul says, "In him we live, move, and have our being," as even some of your own poets have said. I'll remember that. There is a gray sheet that I hope you have that had all the scripture readings on it. I want you to know that the irony is not lost on me that today is Earth Day, and so I've produced another piece of paper for you to have. That didn't get lost on me. I appreciate the irony of that. My hope is that our time together is going to be so useful that you will save this piece of paper, not for all of eternity, as Maddie mentioned, but for part of eternity. You'll see that there's, on the side with the Gospel of John, if you open it out, there are two words that seem foreign, and that's because they are, Lectio Divina, which means sacred reading, or kind of looks like it means divine reading. Those are maybe words you've heard before. I remember in my first call to ministry as a youth pastor, I was going to teach on a Wednesday night about Lectio Divina, and so I wrote a note, and I gave it to our administrative assistant, and I said, "Could you send this out to all the youth, like in a postcard form?" And so when the youth showed up on Wednesday night, they said, "Mike, are we having a lecture and a dinner?" And I said, "What?" And they said, "Yeah, we're doing a lecture and dinner tonight." And I said, "Oh, Lectio Divina, lecture and dinner. Gotcha." Well, of course, the lecture part, they probably knew that was right, because I do talk a lot and talk at them some. But that's, of course, there's the root word for lecture, lectio, reading, right? Lectionary. So it was not a word that the secretary knew. And also, my handwriting is bad, so it's my fault. But we made up. But in our tradition, we have been a very scriptural-oriented tradition. And somewhere along the lines, we decided that reading more is better than reading less. And so you have been involved, I'm sure, in programs where you could read the Bible through in 3 years, right? And then someone thought, "Wait a minute, that seems like too easy. How about we read the Bible through in a year?" And I haven't checked, but I wonder if there's a program that says you can read the Bible through in 6 months. You know, we're trying to read the Bible through as fast as we can, to read as much as we can, as fast as we can. Well, that's when you're reading for information. Of course, we want you to have read the Bible some, to kind of know what's there. If we say the burning bush, we would really like you to think of Moses as quickly as possible, and even to know that it's in the Old Testament and not the New Testament. So there's some stuff that we want to know, of course, but we never want to forget that we want to read the Bible not only for information, but for formation. We read these words because they form who we are. We are steeped in the Scriptures, and it permeates who we are. And so you could think of Lectio Divina as sort of a plan where you read through the Bible in 20 years, right? We read a very small amount. So today we'll do the John 10 passage, and I'm going to read it through once and allow some time for silence, and then I'll read it through again. And as you hear it the second time, listen for what might jump out at you. And then I'll have some more time for some more silence. And if you wake up and hear me reading it a third time, I'll understand. You might be a little warm. You might think about what word or phrase that does jump out at you and wonder why. Why does it jump out? What about that word or phrase do you think God is using? We believe that the Scriptures speak to our very existence right now, that God's word is present to us right now, and that they speak a personal word to each one of us in our situation. And so after we read it through a third time, I'll share with you a little bit of what jumps out for me, and then we'll wrap it up with prayer, okay? This is something a little bit different, but I hope that it enriches your spiritual life and our time together. So, John chapter 10, listen now for a word from God. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. It's a little different to read the same passage several times like that. If we each read it, we would hear something different each time, despite the fact that it's the same passage. And if we come back to it in a year, or if we read it every day for the next week, we would hear lots of other meanings. That's specifically the part that jumps out for me today is in verse 16 when Jesus says, I have other sheep. Other sheep? Sort of like if you hear a news story where some man had a secret family for 20 years. Other sheep? He went over there and had dinner every night and we never knew? It's sort of salacious, but other sheep. Now that might interest me because I bring my own experience to the passage, and my experience is that I was baptized in a congregational church in Colorado. I grew up as a Methodist among Methodists. I went to a Catholic high school for 3 years, and that was an interesting experience where I pinched a nun's elbow, but we don't have to talk about that now. But I went off to college, to a Presbyterian college, and that's where they got their hooks in me. And when I was in seminary, my first job was at an Episcopal nursing home. And that's when I discovered the prayer book and really enjoyed my time with the Episcopalians. So I sort of have a checkered denominational past. I have spent some time with at least some of the other sheep. And so when Jesus says, I have other sheep, I wonder if Jesus is talking about that. Is he talking about all these different approaches to Christianity that all have integrity in and of themselves and all bring something different to the table? Can they be the other sheep that all come together into the one flock? Some of them would agree with that. Some of them would say, that's not right. In fact, back in Missouri, Elizabeth and I, just down the road, you know, a mile or so from the Presbyterian church where we both worked together, there was a church. We could just close up now because they're the one true church, and they've been at it in Adair County, Missouri, for a long time. So I don't know what you guys have been doing, but they're the one true church. But somehow they might be a part. With God's help, they may be a part of these other sheep that belong to the fold. When I pull back the lens a little bit wider, I start to think about otherness. Otherness. And before I get into otherness, I'm just going to shut this microphone off and switch to this one because it's bothering me a little bit. Marco Polo, I'll resist the urge to turn into Sid Caesar, okay? Holding a handheld microphone kind of makes me want to do that sometimes. So otherness is a fascinating concept, and we are all really other from one another. I remember my first job bussing tables at Frisch's Big Boy. And I think I've told you about that. So one time, all the tables were all bussed and cleared and ready. And there was one couple
It was a little bit early. It was before the dinner rush, and there was one couple sitting there, and their food was ready. And one of the servers asked me to just take them their food. And so I thought, man, I'm getting a promotion. You know, okay, I get to deliver food now. You know, what's going to happen for me? So I went over there, and it was liver. I was, yeah, I know. I needed to deliver this liver and onions to deliver the liver. And so I went, and as I handed this gentleman his plate, I said, sir, I don't know whether to offer my condolences or not, but here's your liver. And he said something to me that I'll never forget. He smiled, and he looked at me, and he said, son, you will completely change every 7 years. And I thought, I don't know about that, because I still don't like liver. But he did. He liked it, and he ordered it. I mean, he looked a lot like I look, but and we seemed to be kind of the same in lots of major ways. But that was a huge difference. That was a big otherness that I had to come to terms with, at least the smell, because I had to deliver his liver. You know, we have some otherness when it comes to food practices, right? And that's all over the world. People eat different kinds of foods. You know, I was at the, I don't know how many of you went. I didn't see you there. I was at the Music and Seafood Festival because I like to be in the full sun in the heat of the day. That's a good choice, right? So I was there, and I got some crawfish. Is that the right way we say that? The insect of the sea. Disgusting. And I don't even know why I did that. I eat them about every 10 years. Not every 7 years, but every 10 years. And each time I think, yes, this is a mistake. This is a terrible mistake. This is worse than vegetables because it takes all this work and you get a little bit and then you have to just keep going. It's like celery. I mean, what is that about? So I'm not sure, but there I was. This is a terrible mistake. I was at a party earlier in the day, though, to celebrate Bill Stewart's 90th birthday. So when you see him, wish him a happy birthday. And I noticed, though, at the Elks, I'm about ready to become an elk, because they had big TV, like a 55-inch TV, and it had soccer on. And I thought, sign me up. I'll swear an oath and wear an elk hat, and let's do it. Because soccer was on, and I was really excited, because I know you don't care, because it was Manchester United against Tottenham Hotspur, and this is the semifinal for the FA Cup. Biggest sport in the world. Very exciting. Not to you, but to many people. And so I was like, you cannot look at that. You need to pay attention. But it was all I could do. I told David Cohen this earlier. It's all I could do, David, not to get up and leave the conversation I was having with you and go see what was going on with Man United and Hotspur, see what was happening. People like soccer. Not you, but other people do. It's like liver. You know, I guess if you don't like it, you don't like it. But I love it. But people don't understand, right? All this otherness, that's just two little tiny examples that don't mean a lot. There's all sorts of otherness that we have. There's a French philosopher who said something really fascinating about faces, and faces as an example of otherness. He says, ordinarily we're characters. We play characters. Maybe we're professors or Supreme Court justices. We're the sons or daughters of so-and-so. Maybe we are everything that our passports say that we are. But then he says, the face and the vulnerability of the face is meaning all by itself. You are you. In this sense, you can't say that the face is really ever seen. It never becomes just contents. The face is uncontainable. It leads beyond. It's the signification of a way out and an escape from what is sort of regular to, he would say later, near infinity. And then he makes this interesting comment that relates to us today, because we're talking about the scriptures a little bit. He says, the Holy Scriptures do not signify through the dogmatic tale of their supernatural or sacred origin. Wait a minute. Hold on. What? He says, but they signify through the expression of the face of the other that they illuminate. There is a way in which when we encounter the scriptures, we're encountering a face. Face of the other. And that's the power. It's not the doctrine. It's not the rule of law. It's none of that. But as we read these scriptures, we're encountering a face. We're encountering the face of the other. The one who says, I must bring all these other sheep together. All these other sheep that are so other than you, that have different tastes, different interests, different ways of reading the scriptures. I must bring all of these together into one flock, and I will be the one shepherd. I am the good shepherd, he says. And so he brings all of them together. He says that as he lays his life down for all the sheep, that will be the moment that draws them together, and they will be one flock under this one shepherd. There's a little part that kind of blows me away. Jesus is talking about knowing. I know my own. By the way, has my microphone lost all its juice? No? Am I still on? Polo? Okay, good. Just couldn't tell. So he talks about knowing because he says, I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. It's amazing that we all have a relationship with Jesus as the Good Shepherd, and he knows us, and we have been getting to know him all these years. But when we think about the otherness of other people, it blows our minds that he's able to be the Good Shepherd for all of us and gather us all together despite all our differences. He's able to gather us together, and he knows us. Not in the way that he controls us or he owns us, but he knows us and gathers us together despite our otherness, or really because of our otherness. The church I served in Kentucky, or rather in Missouri, they did a survey about music in the church. What is your favorite hymn, the survey asked, and what is your least favorite hymn? The favorite hymn was The Lord of the Dance. The tune is Green Sleeves, right? And I noticed on the survey that the least favorite hymn was Lord of the Dance. The tune is Green Sleeves. And I thought, that's fascinating. We're not ever going to sing that hymn because it's obviously a hot button issue. But there they are. It's their favorite and their least favorite. And they're all together in the same pew, and they've been together for years and years. I was in a Sunday school class with two guys named John. They were talking about the virgin birth. And one guy said, frankly, Pastor, I don't even believe in it. And the other John right next to him said, interesting that you say that, because it's the cornerstone of my faith. And those two Johns were in the same Sunday school for 20 years. So different. And Jesus was able to somehow wrangle them both together to be not only in the same flock, but right next to each other in the same Sunday school class. I don't know how he does it, but he's the good shepherd, and we're the sheep. And so for us, the challenge of the Christian life is in the little word, listen. Listen to his voice. He says, I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. Listening is about obedience. It's about hearing something and sort of letting it permeate ourselves. Listening is about that trip from the head to the heart, which is the longest 18 inches we ever take, that trip, as one great preacher said. And so we are called to listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd, to let that permeate our being, and to become more and more faithful as his followers, to recognize difference, sure, and recognize sameness, yeah, but not to convert difference into sameness, but to try to accept one another and all the different views that we have, to try to accept one another and be together as other sheep in this one flock with our amazing shepherd who does bring us together and will bring us together and must bring us together. This is his Father's command. Thanks be to God. Amen.